And welcome to another edition of AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. Along with Andy Lipichnek, I'm Tim Capper. Welcome. We're now in the thick of things, Andy. We finally have more than one team, I guess a more than one divisional champion. We have everybody who's set in one conference. Playoffs, they're coming up. I mean, it's what can we say? It's about that time where it's, I guess we could say, the road to the road to New Orleans, I guess we could say. Every time I think of that, though, I tell you, dude, I always think of I just think of the NCAA tournament. You know, whenever you hear the road of to something, I
the road
think,
to the Final Four.
Exactly. It's like the road to Arena Bowl. Like, what's that? You know, anybody doesn't know the league, so. Let's see, what do we got to talk about this week? I mean, we have games themselves, obviously. You know, it's funny. We have some, finally, the league recognized some new, the records that were broken. I know you got in your 15th anniversary magazine. I wanted to ask you about that, actually. Let's go into it's something, it's a topic, but, you know, we won them. I haven't gotten mine in yet from the league, but I know you got it. Honestly, what is your overall opinion? I mean, it's like 80 pages or something like that, right?
You know, it's better than you would expect.
Oh, yeah?
It was better than the 15-year magazine, because the magazine really wasn't a magazine. So, I mean, it's nice. It's thick. You know, they have a couple of my photos that I'm not credited in, but, you know, I was working for Getty, so I guess they don't necessarily need to credit me since they paid me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the photos they obviously took low quality and they had them in high quality, which I don't understand. But, you know, some of the good stuff in there, you know, are pretty good. They got some of their dates wrong, obviously, like the AFL test games, obviously wrong because somebody on the other end of this line, figured out that was wrong. My boy Chris Arnold down in Tampa got a lot of photos in, as he should, because most of the photos the league have historically are there. There is one that I really love. It's on page 16. It's a picture of the Thunderdome from Tampa's first season. It's actually their second season. It says first season, though you can still see on the thing it says world champions.
Okay.
So obviously it was their second season, not their first. But, you know, it's actually a pretty good magazine for all concerned.
Well worth the 15. You think it's well worth the $15 then? Whatever the.
I mean, if you're a fan of the league, I definitely think that you might want to think about getting it. There's a lot of stuff in there. Some stuff is just generic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about all the Hall of Famers, and it's just the stuff that's copied and pasted from the league. A lot of stuff from B.J. Pickard. He has a bunch of stories in here.
Okay.
Which, you know, he's only been in the league for a little bit of time. So, you know, it's, you know, him and Evan both haven't had a lot of AFL experience, but they write good articles. So, you know, there's some good stuff in here.
Now, what was announced just the other day is that, you know, obviously the Philadelphia Soul playoff game had been announced. It's going to be played on the first Saturday of the round, which would be on Saturday, July 28th, and now the league has announced that San Antonio is actually going to get the host game for they're going to host their game, and it's going to be on the NFL Network. San Antonio, you look at the crowd and whatnot. I mean, it's we don't know what the other matchups are going to be yet, Andy. But I mean, it's San Antonio first year. They have won a heck of a lot of games this year. I mentioning before, I still don't think that they are, even though they've won 10 in a row, you know, 13-3, I'm not still convinced, but I mean, sort of a coup, I think, for the Talons, first year out of their old AF2 market, I guess we could say, being the game of the week for the playoffs for the first week. I mean, it's, what do you think? I mean, it's San Antonio, it's a matter of just the crowd showing up, I would imagine, right?
Well, I think that it's not really technically going to matter. I think whoever they play, if it's going to be Utah or San Jose, because I really think that this weekend that Arizona will wrap up the division,
mm-hmm.
that whatever one of those two teams plays, I think they're going to beat San Antonio. I really do. They're both really hitting it hard right now. the last time Utah played San Antonio, they didn't have Rob Keefe at defensive coordinator.
That's true.
And he has made a world of difference to that team. And I really think that it may show more depth of a Rob Keefe for a potential head coaching job next year in the league, which is going to, I think it's going to completely devastate the Utah Blaze in the first place, because I think both their guys, offense and defensive coordinators, are top notch at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they both deserve shots at getting head coaching positions next year. But as far as San Antonio, I mean, they're the big surprise team for me this year. I really thought that, you know, how could Aaron Garcia not just retire after last year? I mean, you end potentially the greatest game in arena football history with the quintessential arena football play, a touchdown.
Yeah.
As time expires, wins the game for Jacksonville, on the road, no less. And then you come to a team that's essentially an expansion franchise, because not a lot of the, you know, Tulsa talents came there, a whole new coaching staff, different ownership, completely different, you know, thing. And at the beginning of the season, I was like, oh, well, proved it. You know, Aaron Garcia's struggling. He's not doing that well. Now they won 10 in a row. And I think a lot of it has to do with that defense that they have. And it's just getting them into position to win games. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised that when they put name MVP of the league, that Aaron Garcia doesn't get a lot of consideration, because, you know, he is the leader of that team. And he's just got a bunch of, I don't want to say misfits around him, but, you know, it's not like he has these superstars around him.
Right.
You know, it's not like how what San Jose does, and they bring in superstars, because, you know, 2 years ago, Huey Whitaker was, you know, an all-arena selection. He was Iron Man of the Spokane Arena Bowl. The year before that, he had another 1,000-yard season. And then, like, you know, this year, he's not getting very many yards. They had Hank Edwards for a while, you know, a 1,000-yard guy, not doing very much. Ben Nelson, you know, 2 years ago, you know, second in the league in every category to Rod Windsor. You know, they're all role players in a team like that, even though they're superstars. So it's a lot different, I think, when you got a team like San Antonio, when you got Aaron Garcia, who's got a bunch of guys that are, you know, I don't know if any of those receivers would be number one receivers on the other playoff teams.
You would expect, too, that it, with 13 wins, having won 10 in a row. You know, this team has not even scored 1,000 points this year, Randy. And I think it's unfathomable to see this. I mean, you got Philadelphia's over 1,100. I mean, and they have 14 wins. Arizona has just over 1,000, you know, and 12 wins. Utah and San Jose are over 1,000. Is it, you know... I guess they're making it up with their defense, but I mean, can, you know, they're scoring 57 points a game. Is that, you know, as you said, you think they're going to lose in the first round. I actually think they're going to lose in the first round too. It's,
I don't think it's because they're San Antonio. I don't think it's because of anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that right now, San Jose and Utah are just that hot, and they're playing the best that they're playing right now. You know, we can talk about that 12 touchdown performance against San Jose,
right,
which is a complete fluke, because they had every DB that was playing was somebody that was not on the team the week before. And, you know, now that they got Andre Jones back, what happened immediately? His first game back, boom, two touchdowns, one return for a touchdown. I mean, two interceptions, one return for a touchdown. You know, they have Mervin Brookins over there, and they shut down a New Orleans franchise that was hot at the time. They had won 4 in a row.
Yep.
They had some impressive wins behind their back. And they just made them look like an AF2 team.
Well,
that final score was jaded, because for 7 minutes at one point, Mark Greaves didn't even have the ball, because they had a turnover for a touchdown, mm-hmm. They had another thing for a touchdown, and then Greaves sat for the last 3 minutes of the game. So they weren't even trying to, you know, go in and score another touchdown. In fact, I was at the game, and they have a promotion where you get free food if you score 60 points.
Yeah.
And the last play of the game, when Mark Lewis did not make it into the end zone, there was no cheers. There was boos. Because they're like, we want our free food. We want our free food. And I remember the same thing happened when I was in Tampa Bay. There was a thing where they would score 50, because, you know, scoring 50 at that time, you know, 15 years ago, was still a lot.
Yeah.
It's not like today where, you know, right now you have – 13 of the 17 teams that are averaging over 50 points a game. That wasn't the case a long time ago. Everything changed in the last couple of years, getting better talent, and also the switch to get rid of the Ironman rules.
Yeah.
That's there'd never been a 1,000-point scoring team until 2007, the first year of free substitution.
Exactly.
And I was at the game, you know, as PR director. We won the game. We won it big. It was against, I think, like the Florida Bobcats. And the score was like 59 to like 12 or something, because it was the Bobcats. And people were booing. And Coach Markham was like, why were they booing? I'm like, you scored 59. The next time, it was like 3 or 4 weeks later, there was a couple minutes left to go in the game.
Yeah.
And he called a timeout, went over to the head coach, and was like, I have to score here, or the people are going to boo. he's like, stop me if you can, but I'm going to go score a touchdown. They scored the touchdown. The crowd goes wild.
You hear
the announcer. He's like, yeah, you scored 50 points. You get the free, you know, at the time, I think it was pizza from like Little Caesars. And it's like, there you go.
That's freaking hilarious.
So people were booing. And I know that doesn't really, you know, go too much into like a Darren Arbette for that, but maybe it will this week because, you know, he is a part owner, and I'm sure somebody else mentioned to him, hey, you know, you were being booed because you didn't score that extra points to get there. So if they're playing Iowa and they need a couple extra points, they might get it at the end of
that's,
the game.
That's freaking hilarious. Now, you were talking about New Orleans before. What about the mediocrity, that's happening in the American Conference? I mean, you got three teams in the Southern Division who are 8-8 right now.
Yeah. You know, I wrote an article that I know that you're probably going to post tonight or tomorrow, and I go and talk about in the article how this was not the case. You know, conferences didn't matter in the first, you know, 20-some-odd years of the league. Up until 2004, they had conferences, but it didn't matter.
No.
As you know, because then you would have Orlando and Tampa playing for an Arena Bowl. Orlando and Nashville played for an Arena Bowl. And of course, Arizona and San Jose played for two Arena Bowls. So, and those are some of the best games, and some of them were not very great games, but to get those great rivalries playing each other was fantastic, and now you don't get that. And so since that's happened, and they've made it that the conferences matter, and you get a little trophy, it's just been kind of horrific, some of the stuff that's happened. You know, you had 3 6-10 teams in 2008 make it into the playoffs, and this year you can have up to three teams that have non-winning records that are going to be either 8-10, 9-9, potentially.
Yeah.
Into the playoffs, while you're going to have a team like Cleveland, Chicago, that could be 11-7 and won't go into the playoffs. You have a team like Spokane that could be 10-8, and they won't go in the playoffs only because they were in the tougher division. That beat each other up.
I always said, remember, a few weeks ago, I said we need to have a crossover like the CFL.
Well, the CFL only has a few teams in comparison.
No, I know.
I mean, I wish they would do something like that, because in my story, I say, okay, well, let's rewind back into the day. What would it be like? And the 18 playoff would have six teams from the National and two teams from the other conference.
Right.
And so, like, if that were to happen, if the league said, hey, we were going to do this. Obviously, you can't do it because the season's already started. Everything's happened here. But based on record alone, this is how it would look like. I did all the tiebreakers. This is how it is. Based on record, it would be the number 8 New Orleans Voodoo at the number 1 Philadelphia Soul.
Okay.
The number 7 Spokane Shock at San Antonio. Number 6 Chicago at number 3 Arizona. Number 5 San Jose at number 4 Utah. And then if you decided, hey, we're going to let the division champion host a home game, which would mean New Orleans at this point in time would host as the number 4 seed. And if you notice, I put them at number 8 before. So that means there are four teams, all four road teams are better based on record and tiebreakers than New Orleans.
It's true.
They should just reconsider it, because in my opinion, it's kind of like, you know, the parents that have the kids that are not very good at sports.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, no, you got to put my little Jimmy in. I don't care if, you know, little Luke over there has already scored 4 touchdowns and is unstoppable. You need to bench him because my little kid who can't even hold the ball needs to go in. And then at the end of the season, it's like, oh, I'm going to put up this 12th place out of 12 trophy, you know.
I see what you're saying.
Here's all these little ribbons. And that's what it is to me. And it's like, Spokane and Chicago are better teams than these teams, and they don't get to go in. Now, that's not saying anything against Philadelphia being in that conference. They obviously are the best team in the league right now,
mm-hmm.
and they deserve to have where they're – they would have a very similar record if they were in the National Conference. So there's nothing against them. I'm just anti the rest of that conference because they suck in comparison to the other six teams.
Like you're saying for New Orleans, would you at least give, say if you won the division, that it actually means something? Give them one of the top?
No, I wouldn't do that either.
No?
They get to host the Arena Bowl with their terrible crowds. They have 2,000 less people coming to their games than they did last year.
Interesting.
It's like they shouldn't have got it. It should have went to Orlando this year. I personally think it should have went to Tampa. So you can kind of mirror the NFL and say Super Bowl 25 was in Tampa, Arena Bowl 25 is in Tampa.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
But, you know, they love New Orleans. They want to sweat their butts off. Enjoy.
They must be get something. If for them to come back for a third time, I guess they saw a plus in it, and I guess they're trying to recreate. But, you know, I agree. I think maybe another city should have had it. But
I mean, we've had only – this is the fifth – neutral side Arena Bowl, and three of them now have been in New Orleans and two have been in Vegas.
Right, exactly.
And it's not like this is the old New Orleans voodoo that sold out both those games. This is not going to be a sellout.
No.
I mean, even if the voodoo were playing it, so say they slip in and they win. I don't think that they're going to sell out that game. They haven't sold it out this year. They haven't got 10,000 in a game.
That's true, too.
And, you know, that's – I believe the last Arena Bowl was – well over 14,000.
Yep.
So it's not going to be a fun sight to get a wide shot.
Now, do you guys agree with Andy? Do you agree with me? I mean, is there something that you think what the league should do in order to make the playoffs? I don't want to say more fair, but to should it go throwback where just seeds 1 through 8? You know, let us know what you think. There are the message boards. There's our Twitter account and Facebook. It's both at ArenaFan. You can contact me at tim.capra@arenafan.com, or you can contact Andy at andy.lupischnack@arenafan.com.
And my article is going to be called, it's not posted now, but it will be posted in the next day, playoff format needs to change.
Yep.
And so, you know, please read that through. Tell me what you think. And let's start this debate maybe that we can, you know, hopefully when in the off season. I know the Chicago people and the Spokane people will probably be, you know,
very
loving what I have here.
Yeah, pro-changing.
And so they're going to be very pro on that. I'll tell you, Tampa Bay will definitely be pro on that too, especially if they, since they didn't get to go in the playoffs in 2006 because of this.
Yeah.
They would have been in there. I have it in there that in 2006, they allowed 2 7-9 teams into the playoffs, Utah and Chicago, mm-hmm. while Columbus, which was 8-8 in the other conference, and then Tampa, which was 7-9, but Tampa had the tiebreaker over Utah. So that means Utah was the higher seed over Chicago was the higher seed over Utah, but when you put all three of those in together, Tampa Bay would have had the tiebreaker over both those teams.
It's interesting. You know, you go back and you see.
So that means that the Arena Bowl champions that year would not have made it into the playoffs.
Wow. Now, you talk about throwback and old school stuff and looking in the past. Commissioner Jerry Kurz 2 weeks ago made an announcement that the league is looking at bringing back Iron Man football. They happen to put up a poll, and as we know, Andy, polls are not that scientific, but they put up a poll on the league website how many people wanted to bring back Iron Man football for the, I guess we could say, the 2013 season. Last time I checked it was not going very well for the idea of bringing back Iron Man football. But as you and I both know, Andy, it's sometimes you can have your opinion on something and get the fans' input. It does not necessarily mean that's what's going to occur. Now, we haven't heard anything yet from the league concerning this. Now, bringing back Iron Man football, I mean, it would totally reverse a lot of the stuff that has occurred in the leagues in the past. And it makes me wonder if this is – would you consider this a possible – not necessarily a cost-cutting measure, but with the new CBA, which has been agreed upon but is yet to be signed as if we're still talking, is that part of the move there, or is it something that the league is – that Jerry is just looking at and saying – we need to make some change. We need to right some wrongs.
Well, I'm against it. I didn't think I would have been, but I think we have better style of football since 2007. We're seeing a lot more scoring, and that's what I want to see when I go to arena football. If you don't want to see scoring, then you can go watch soccer. I love scoring.
Yeah, I do too.
I love seeing all these teams get these many points. This did not happen until free substitution happened. And then the following year, when they got rid of the Jack linebacker, now that he can go from left to right.
Right.
Scoring went up again. The reason why scoring went up again that time was because you weren't getting all these little dink and dunk kind of throws. So you weren't getting these 5 yard, 5 yard, 5 yard, I'm going down the field. Now quarterbacks were like, well, hell with it, I'm just going to chuck it. And they chuck it even more, and we're getting a lot of long touchdowns, which are a lot more exciting than getting a 2 yard touchdown.
Yeah.
And so I'm very excited about that. And the old Ironman rules, I mean, I challenge any single person in here to really come and explain them to me. I know them because I worked with the team. You know, if you understand the ODO or the DOO, how are you going to do this and put your guys in there and substitute them?
Right.
You know, it's not as simple as, oh, I like Iron Man rules. I like – you don't – if you're watching the game, tell me when the guy switches. Tell me when he switched and now that he got switched and he switched back, he just got hurt. Now he can't play for the rest of the quarter because he was just banged up for one play.
Right.
There are some bad teams out there nowadays that I would not be surprised that say, okay, well, now the teams are going to go to that. Let's wait till the guy gets substituted, and I want you to hit him as hard as you can because he gets knocked out for that play, but it's not just one play he just got knocked out for. He got knocked out for the rest of the quarter. And it's a completely different thing. Yes, it's what the game used to be like. Well, you know what? In the NFL, they didn't have the forward pass when they started. They used to wear no helmets, then leather helmets, and now they're all padded up. Should we go back to that? That's the same concept I'm going to say to people. And as far as that poll is concerned, when that poll first came out, there was more people supporting it, going back to Iron Man, and then it went back and forth, and all of a sudden, now there's like over like 140,000 votes on that.
Oh, which, really? Okay, I wasn't sure.
Which, you know, when I voted 5 minutes later, because you were allowed to vote again. And it changed by like 7,000. And that was me doing it like, I don't know, like 12 in the morning, my time, which is 3 o'clock Eastern. So I'm like, yeah, I don't think there's that many people on the website right now that's doing that.
Well, it's, and the reason why I say something like when it comes to not, they're not scientific, there was a, I actually had noticed something, many may not know this, I had noticed something, you remember when they were voting? Couple years back for the league, the actual logo, I think it was last year's logo, where they allowed the fans to vote what was the best logo that they were going to use for the Arena Bowl. The same exact thing occurred when it came to the voting there. You know, at a particular time during the day, it was when I voted, I saw what the voting was. Like number 3 was ahead of number 5. Number 5 being what was the logo that was used. Then when I woke up and checked the final results, it had totally flip-flopped. And we're not talking by a couple of votes, we're talking by a couple of hundred votes. So, and it flipped the other way around. So as I said, they're not scientific. Polls can be manipulated very easily. It'll be very interesting though, Andy, to see if they actually do make the change and go back to Iron Man football.
I just hope that they say, let's not do it. Let's keep it the way it is. Cause this is how I see it from a team perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can go after anybody. The second that I have to go to Iron Man, now I have to consider, do I go after the better offensive lineman and then throw him on defense where he's just, you know, gonna be blocked. He's
right.
Not, you know, he might get a tackle every once in a while. Hell, he might get a sack. Whoa, wait, great. Or now do I go after the best offensive lineman and that's what he does?
Yeah. By the way,
and go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say the poll actually is still open. I was actually able to go back and check. So far 196,454 votes have been cast for the for should they return to Iron Man football, and it is overwhelmingly no, 76% to 24%. So
unbelievable. Yeah, and if you compare that to the one that they have now, out, they're also saying that the poll that they just they're doing for the National Guard Player of the Week is 240,000. And the reason that it, I think it's that high, and I see it every time that the, somebody named from the Philadelphia Soul always wins these. Because if you go on that right now and it says Orlando Predators, Jarvis Williams, the Souls, Derek Ross, and then Joe Hillis from Tampa Bay, this guy has 98% of the vote. He has almost 200,000 votes, while the next closest guy has 3,000 votes.
Yeah.
Whenever Philly has anything where they can vote for it, they always win because either their fan base is just that great, which it could be, or they have some people that, you know, have made a little thing on the internet where they can just hit the button and it keeps on voting nonstop.
Oh, I see.
I don't like the American Idol approach to this where I can vote as many times as I want. I want them to be able to track my IP address and say, nope, you voted already.
Yeah, you can vote,
only once what
a
day. I do.
Is that the case for the Hall of Fame voting where you can only vote once a day?
Yeah, exactly. And you have to be registered.
Yes.
So I'm not saying you should be registered for this. I don't think you should be registered for the Hall of Fame as well, but there's no way that this guy, that they're getting that many when that voting started yesterday.
No, that's true. And I know that a lot of the teams do push this on social media when there is one of their players have been nominated. You go back and check some of them ones. I mean, back in week 13, there were almost 980,000 votes cast. 980,000 votes. Week 15, week 14.
That's more people than have seen an arena football game in person this year. Very close to the amount.
Yeah, I was going to mention that just in a couple of minutes, actually. It's just a shade less than the total number of people. You're right. Week 14 is funny. It goes from 900,000. Week 14, Andy, only 155,000 votes. So,
was there any Philadelphia Soul in that?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because
if you have a Soul guy or a
the next week,
Spokane Shock guy,
755,000.
They just have a very internet savvy group of fans. That's great. That's great. I mean,
reminds me a lot of what happens when it comes. There's a poll that comes out for the CFL as an example. If there's a Saskatchewan Rough Rider involved in that poll, you can forget it. No other team's going to win except for the guy who plays for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So it's like that. It's their fan base. So you're talking about numbers comparing in votes to the actual tennis. I know we touched on this a couple of weeks ago, but the Arena Football League has gone over 1 million fans for the 16th season. I think it's the 16th consecutive season. But they are most likely going to end up being the second lowest average in league history for fans that have shown up to games. Concerning? Is it a sign? I mean, is this why the league's looking at making all these changes? Or I know we have a lot of the teams that are averaging less than 5,000 people. It is a matter of that the league needs to contract, or does they need to relegate them possibly to this new AFDL if the minor league happens next year, the developmental league happens. But you would think that this would be something that the league needs to work on for 2013.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you look at these numbers, and I like to look at New Orleans. They're at a little bit less than 6,000. Last year, they were 8,200. And they suck last year, and they're actually a good team this year. They're going to probably make the playoffs, possibly win their own division, and yet they can't draw. And it's just really, really sad because they used to draw double, almost triple what they currently are doing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, it's Dan Newman's organization compared to the Benson organization, which is a beast. And I know what they did back then, where it was like, oh, I want to interview Drew Brees. Well, guess what? You have to go interview Andy Kelly now, too.
Yeah.
And that was the way to do it. And they have no backup there in New Orleans. And also, I saw today on our fan board, I guess somebody's posting that I guess they've been hearing that Tom Benson's trying to buy the Voodoo name. and to rename the Hornets, which I think would be a great thing for them, because, I mean, I don't think of New Orleans and think Hornets, but, you know, the New Orleans Voodoo, that's the, you know, it was voted the best name in AFL history, and it pretty much is.
Yeah.
And you just can't let that go.
No, I agree with you. I think the Voodoo has been synonymous. The only thing I think that killed it this year was the changing from Coach O'Hara, I know he had a hand in changing the uniforms to the black. It just killed it. The purple is perfect. Adding more black to their color scheme, I think, just totally ruined it for me. But, I mean, right now you have, you know, it's about 600 people less per game that are showing up compared to 2011. It is still even lower than what 2010 was. I mean, it's a little disheartening. They go from...
Well, I think one of the things you're looking at is Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, you know, they drew 16,000 in week two, their first game, and they've kind of not done as great since then. They've only been over 10,000 one time since then, and they're at 97-47 at this point in time in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they've struggled. Yes, they probably need to go in a new direction with their head coach next year. And, you know, because that's not Tampa Bay Storm football. You know, being 7-9, being, you know, missing the playoffs for two straight years, especially after going to the Arena Bowl,
mm-hmm.
That's just not acceptable in Tampa Bay. And, you know, from what I've understood and heard is that from a paid tickets perspective, they're going up, that Derek Brooks is doing a fantastic job there. And just, you know, they've had a lot of issues, and so have pretty much every team in the league. They've had a lot of, you know, troubles drawing fans. And
look at Kansas City, look at Georgia. I mean, that's an total embarrassment.
And I'll let you guys, you know, everyone there know a little secret that I heard. I heard that there's a good potential that Kansas City might not be coming back next year, and that the front office was actually told this week that the team might be gone. I mean, it's a rumor. I've heard it from two sources of mine. One that is I've never even heard of. They just sent me an email, but one is actually somebody that I trust. But I don't know. You know, maybe the team does come back next year. But I mean, you had a game in week four where they had 2,800 people.
I know.
Announced attendance. That's announced. And from looking at, you know, there was probably only 1,500 people in that game. And that's the lowest attendance in almost 15 years.
Yeah, it's...
And, you know, their next home game, which was 5 weeks later, they did draw 6,300. But, you know, this is not what the Kansas City did when the Brigade were there. And now that... I don't know. I mean, you know... But the thing is, they're not even the lowest in attendance. That would be Georgia.
I know. And that's embarrassing. I just can't...
Well, I mean, I think that the thing that you're looking at it with Georgia and New Orleans is... Yes, that's the Georgia Force. Yes, that's the New Orleans Voodoo, but it's not the Georgia Force owned by Arthur Blank of the Falcons.
Yeah.
The New Orleans Voodoo owned by Tom Benson, where they have leverage and they can say the things like I was just saying. Oh, you want to talk to, you know,
so-and-so? You got
to
go.
Roddy, you want to talk to Roddy Wright? Okay, well, you have to talk to Chris Greisen.
Yeah.
That's what was happening in 2008. And that's just not happening anymore.
Having
that kind of that ownership, is a detriment in that regard to try to get people there, and they just have to do the other thing, and then not just spend money on advertising.
Exactly.
Do stuff like what San Jose's doing, where, you know, this is their last game. So the San Jose Sabercats regular season actually ends this week. I know it seems weird, you know, because we got games next week, but their season ends this week.
Yeah.
And if you buy season tickets, you get a free ticket, two free tickets that you can give to anybody you want. For this week's game, if you're already a season ticket holder, or if you want to join, you get the tickets to this game free. So, and most of these teams do the stuff where, you know, you buy the regular season tickets,
yep.
And then you get the first playoff game free. Obviously, the playoff game's not free for San Jose because they won't host unless a lot of stuff happens, or if they play Utah potentially in the American Conference Championship. You know, then you would get that first game free next year. So technically, if you buy a season ticket now, you get this game free and a game next year potentially for free with all whole kinds of other benefits. It's like, I don't understand it. I mean, if you're an arena football fan and you're not a season ticket holder, I really don't. These teams all bend over backwards to make sure you're comfortable as a season ticket holder. And, you know, seeing the attendance numbers in places like Georgia and Kansas City, two markets that were pretty strong in 2008, is just, and New Orleans. It's just devastating. And, you know, when you also look at a team like Pittsburgh where they had a really great thing last year,
yep.
and, you know, they're what, third to the bottom in attendance this year? Yes, they got struggles. But, you know, they never had more than 7,000 in one of their games.
I know. And that probably goes to, and we'll probably be able to, in the future, we'll be able to look back and see, you know, how much did the labor, the labor problems hurt a lot of these teams? And
didn't hurt Orlando.
No.
They lead the league in attendance.
No, I know.
And I'm sure they lead the league in paid attendance as well, not just, you know, whatever they would do to pay for the game. Their last game, they had 14,000. That's their most in the elite season this year.
I know.
They're the only team over 100,000, and no team is even close to that.
It makes me wonder. It does make me wonder, how, you know, I know it's not consistent how the numbers are announced, but it's something that the league does need to look at, and if it is come true, that it does come true that Kansas City does not show up next year, it's interesting. You know, you look at some of the other teams. Yeah, it's true. Georgia's not Georgia. Georgia is the Alabama Vipers. New Orleans is the old, you know, Bossier Shreveport Battle Wings. It's different owners, and, you know, something has to be done. You know, one thing, Andy, that to me says it all for the Georgia franchise this year, even though they are, you know, at 500, is that they have not put their logo in the end zone. What does that say? You know,
it doesn't say much. When I was in Grand Rapids, you know, we had our old, I guess, from day one in 98, they bought a field, and it was before the newer version of the field turf came out.
Okay.
And so it sucked by the time that 2005 came around. So we found out that the Arena Bowl field, which is still the Arena Bowl field that they use today, is stored in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And so for the 06, 07, and then in the 08 season, we rented that field from the Arena Football League, and the end zones just said Arena Football.
Yes, I remember.
But luckily for a team like Grand Rapids, they were red, so it was fine. Georgia might be going through the same situation. To replace those, that's at least $20,000. And when you're in short budgets, like these teams now have become short, but you know, small budget teams, not like the days where you had a $2-something million salary cap.
Right.
$20,000 is a lot of money.
Oh, it is.
I mean, you know, especially when you're only drawing, you know, 4,100 people. So I don't put anything into it. Nothing.
I know. Now, Andy and I are going to be talking about the games coming up this week, but we do have something special for you. We are going to be talking with a player who is a top 25 all-time player in the Arena Football League. We really can't say much, Andy, without giving away who it's going to be, but we're going to have a short conversation with him for the second half of our show. It's fantastic that we're able to have him here with us on AFL Tonight, and we will get to that interview with him. And
yeah, it's going to be an absolute pleasure. He was one of the greats to ever play this game.
Yep,
absolutely.
Yep, totally agree. So what Andy and I are going to do is we are going to be talking about the games that are coming up this week. There are a lot of playoff implications, and a little bit of jockeying. And it's funny. Do you think within the next couple of days, by the way, Andy, that they're going to flex the Utah-Cleveland game for Arizona-San Antonio? In your opinion? I mean, I think it would be the better matchup to have Arizona-San Antonio on the NFL Network. But
I think it would be too. You know, because basically the winner of that is your number one seed.
That's true.
Now, you know, it's Wednesday already. I don't know. You know. The last time they flexed this late was that the whole Cleveland situation. Mm-hmm. You know, they flexed out of Milwaukee because they were like, oh, they're gonna fold the team, they're gonna all this other stuff. They were gonna forfeit for the game. I don't see them changing it. What's good about Utah is now you get to see one of the greatest quarterback performances of the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Maybe in the history of professional football and what Tommy Grady's doing. Also, I like to look at it as you have two offensive minds in this game playing each other. You have perhaps one of the great offensive minds of the previous AFL, we'll just say,
mm-hmm.
and Steve Tunn. He couldn't really win games a lot, but his offense and the way he did stuff was revolutionary. And then you look at what Matt Sauk has done. I mean, I was looking at the ballot for the AFL Players of the Year this week, and it comes up the Kicker of the Year, and I'm like, does that matter anymore? Because in Utah, I could be the kicker.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as long as I can kick some extra points, because field goals mean nothing.
But and the thing is, they have a great kicker on top of that, one of the best kickers in the league.
Look at it this way. Philadelphia and Utah, zero field goals made this year.
That's crazy.
The top three scoring teams in the league have a combined one field goal. And that's San Jose. Has one field goal made. Everything else is all about touchdowns. Like when I'm at a Sabercats game here, and they're like, it's shutdown time on third down, I'm like, no, it's not. It's just another down.
Yeah.
And that's what you see with Matt Sauk has done. You know, and then you also see it in Philadelphia now with what Clint Dozell is doing as well. And I think both of those guys should be head coaches next year. I'd like to see one of them in Tampa. I think that would be a tremendous fit, and I would love to see a Clint Dozell in Tampa.
We have, obviously we're talking about the Utah game. Arizona-San Antonio could be a great, great game. I'm hoping the fans do show up. They've already played once this year, and San Antonio got smoked, man. I mean, by 34 points, Arizona won this game.
Well, you know, San Antonio got smoked by San Jose too when they were at San Jose.
True.
And then when they took it home, they beat the hell out of them.
Yep.
And that could happen here because, you know, Arizona did not look good last week against Utah.
No, they did not.
They did not look good. And San Antonio, you know, they don't get to play in the West, but they get to play all those teams twice anyway, so they might as well be in the West. And I'm just really shocked and surprised, actually, of how great Aaron Garcia is actually playing. His numbers aren't what they were last year, but, I mean, him and Tommy Grady and Nick Davila are my guys right now for Player of the Year, for MVP. Offensive Player of the Year is without a question, it's going to go to Tommy Grady because he created more offense than anybody else. But when it comes down to MVP, I mean, it's really hard not to think about San Antonio's, Aaron Garcia because, I mean, he's won 10 in a row and he's just a game manager.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean,
I would like to see Arizona do this so that next week becomes even more important for both these teams. Arizona does win, that they do win the West and they clinch the, at least the two spot. And so these two teams would be the teams that would be hosting.
It's funny how you said two teams that are in the thick of things for their division happen to come up in the second to last week of the regular season. It's just crazy. I mean, that should be, I honestly think, the Arizona-San Antonio game, I think, should be the game this week.
Absolutely, it's the best game.
And it should. I think it should be flex. I would hope they would do it. But maybe the logistics are not, they're not able to, because maybe it's possible that the entire crew is already in Utah. But, man, it'd be such a great lead-up to next week and then into the playoffs. So, I mean, the other game that...
And this is a rematch of last year's Arena Bowl with the two quarterbacks.
It's true, too.
You know, and, you know, last year, Nick Davila was the MVP of the league, and then Aaron Garcia was named the Offensive Player of the Year. And, you know, Aaron Garcia had, you know, the best yardage performance and the greatest ending of Arena Bowl.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's always in the back of Nick's mind, you know, because, I mean, here you got a young quarterback that if you put his first three seasons and just do it by games, because obviously he's the best quarterback in the league's history.
Yeah.
And those first 3 years based on, would it be 50 games? So this would be his 51st game this weekend. And his first 50 games, no quarterback is even close to what he's done in yards and touchdowns. and potentially wins. I'd have to look that up because he's just been a winner ever since he's got to that team.
No kidding. Yeah, no kidding. By the way, we didn't choose. If you were to choose a winner between Arizona and San Antonio, oh boy, who'd you choose?
It's hard not to go against San Antonio winning 10 straight.
I
but
agree,
if you look back, when was the last time they lost? They lost to Arizona. And I think Arizona has a really bad taste in their mouth from last week because Davila had his perhaps one of his worst games. He threw two picks. He only completed 54% of his passes and only four touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he's got that on the back of his mind. And I'm going to take Arizona.
Yeah, I would. I'm looking. I probably would give him the Arizona the benefit of the doubt on this one too. As I said, still 10 in a row with San Antonio. I am not convinced in any way, shape, or form. I think Arizona too. Utah, by the way, is going to be hosting the first game ever between the Gladiators and the Blaze. These are two different teams going in two different directions. I don't think really there's much of a Cleveland could play spoil in this one, but Utah is such a high-powered offense. And the defense is so much better than it has been throughout the year. I don't see there's any chance, I don't think, of Cleveland winning this game.
I don't see this being close.
Yeah.
I don't really see this being close at all. And, Tommy Grady's continuing his trek towards, AFL immortality. He hasn't thrown a pick in his last two games, only one in his last five. And during that time, last week he had his worst yardage performance, only 184 yards, but he still threw seven touchdowns.
Exactly.
And, he's thrown at least seven touchdowns in every game except for the first two where he threw six and five.
Yeah.
And, we could talk about all these great performances and everything. We are witnessing the greatest season in the league's history by an individual player.
Totally agree.
I would have said 2 years ago Rod Windsor's performance, which he got shafted by the league, and when they gave Chris Greissen Offensive Player of the Year, was the greatest. This one is just, no one's going to ever come close to these records. I really don't think that his touchdown mark will come close. Yardage, it's between him and Grebe. They're both very, very close. But I think that Grady is, his last two games, I think he's going to go for at least 300 in both games.
I mean, we could potentially have two quarterbacks that are, for the first time, over 6,000 yards, right?
It'd be very close. It'd be very, very close. You're looking at a really long shot for some of these guys to do that. But, yes, Tommy Grady is averaging, on pace, he'd be a little bit under.
You're right. He's just at 5,200 now. Grebe is at 5,400.
Yeah, Grebe would have to throw for 500 yards this week.
Oh, it's true.
His last
You're right.
Game.
The last game. You're right.
But think about it. Grebe's last two seasons, his two biggest yardage seasons, which are right now the biggest in league history. So him and Grady in the last 2 years have the two most yardage, and but between them they still have three games remaining.
Yeah.
So these are some yardage marks that, maybe they will one day be passed again, but I really don't think we're going to see that touchdown mark, anyone ever come close
no,
to 120
I agree.
Even.
I agree with you.
And I think he's going to be close to 140 when it's all said and done.
It's crazy. On Saturday, Pittsburgh going to Georgia. Georgia is still in the thick of things, Andy. We can't really poo-poo the game. It just sort of a brain freeze about what happened last week for the Pittsburgh Power and their loss. These two teams have played before. Force leads the all-time series 2-0. They had played earlier this year where Georgia won by three. Pittsburgh is a – they are – I think Pittsburgh is a different team. Question is, I'm looking at our spread pickers. Our guys here at Arena Fan are picking Georgia to – saying they're favored by eight. I don't know about that. Pittsburgh, I think, has the opportunity to play a huge spoiler in this game.
They absolutely do. I look at it and I think Pittsburgh could actually pull off a little win, a little upset on this one. This is a home game for Georgia. Again, they're the worst attended team, so this might as well be a Pittsburgh home game because the fans don't support the team.
Yeah.
And, you look at their wins and, they really haven't had an impressive win this year.
Now, this is a Georgia team, by the way, who even though they are at 500, their points four to points against, they are minus 101. So
this is a team that also started the season 6-4, and they're 2-4 in their last six games.
Yep.
You know, with losses against Kansas City, they were blown out against Chicago, they were blown out against Utah, and they beat Orlando. Well, that's not like that's an accomplishment this year.
Yeah, I know. No kidding. No kidding.
They lost to them earlier in the year in one of the worst games Arena Football has ever seen, 27-24.
Yep.
I don't see Georgia pulling this one off.
No, I'm going to give Pittsburgh power of the nod on this one too. Another divisional matchup, huge divisional matchup. Orlando is going to be, could easily play spoiler again. Orlando travels to Jacksonville. You know, it's just a matter of, you have Chris Leak, who was nominated for one of the weekly awards this year, this week in the AFL. Probably one of his best performances since he's been in the league.
Oh, he was outstanding last week.
Yep. Question is, though, can they put together something and knock off Jacksonville in Jacksonville? You know, Sharks do lead the overall series 5-2 since they've played. And since the league has come back, Jacksonville, of those games, Jacksonville has only lost at home once. So it's... they can play spoiler. Jacksonville knows that they need this game. It's just a matter of, I guess we could say, which team's going to want it more. Does Orlando really want to play the spoiler and possibly screw Jacksonville out of that divisional championship? Or is Jacksonville going to play like they had, like they did earlier this year where they...
Yeah, well, you know, this is a different Chris Leak than last time they played each other. Last time they played, he was 17 of 32. He had four touchdowns, and he only had 200 yards.
Uh-huh.
He was sacked four times, though. So, I mean, that obviously has been a concern this year. But the last couple games, you know, he has made a lot of progress. This week, I mean, unbelievable. I mean, he had five incompletions, but he had eight touchdowns.
Yeah.
He had 85.7% of his passes.
Yeah.
I think he's really coming into his own. He's really getting this league down. One thing I saw when he was out here in San Jose, which was five games ago for him, was that, you know, he keeps on throwing really, really high, which is a trade that Urban Meyer definitely did at Florida, that you're going to see with, Tim Tebow does that a lot, and he's actually moved his position down a little bit on that. But I'm going to take Orlando to take this. And sadly, when Orlando beats them, I think that you're going to see the first time ever that there'll be no teams from the state of Florida in the playoffs since the league's first, fifth season.
I never thought about that. You're actually right.
And you're going to have a defending champion that won't make the playoffs,
yeah,
potentially.
I know Orlando is playing a lot better. I'm going to give Jacksonville just a slight edge. Just the only reason because they're at home, but it's a very tough choice. Real quickly on the other games, New Orleans, another Southern Division matchup, huge for New Orleans. They're going into Tampa Bay.
I think Tampa's going to take this team. I think Tampa. I saw New Orleans last week. That was not a very strong team. I didn't see that being a playoff team. Tampa is fighting for their playoff life.
Yep.
And you know, they had a, you know, big win last week at Pittsburgh, which, I mean, they barely won. But the week before, when they were at home, that was a fantastic game that came down to the last second against Philadelphia.
Yep.
And they've done well against, you know, New Orleans in the past.
New Orleans is an
They did lose to them earlier this year.
Yep.
But, you know, you had a different quarterback, you had a different situation. And I'm going to go Tampa Bay on this.
New Orleans has been up and down for most of the year for some whatever reason. I don't know what the status is of Nick Hill for this game, so I'm going to go back on the up wagon when it comes to New Orleans in this one. I think New Orleans is going to take Tampa Bay and solidify their spot in the playoffs. Spokane, Kansas City. Spokane.
Yep. Spokane, this could be the last game in Kansas City's franchise history.
Yep. Sure.
You know, I hope that was just a rumor and somebody was just jockeying with me, but, you know, I've had, I hope, I hope. hope the command stay.
Yeah.
If not, maybe they move next year. But I don't like to see the league lose teams.
I don't either. To a Midwest divisional matchup. Two guys from the Midwest, rather. Chicago going to Milwaukee. Milwaukee probably one of the most high teams that I had at the beginning of the year have totally fallen flat. Chicago. Sting of not being able to make the playoffs for the first time in team history, I think Chicago is going to take it out on Milwaukee.
I think Chicago is going to, and I hope that Chicago and Spokane just went out just so that, you know, more fuel to the fire to change the playoff format next year.
Yeah. And last but not least, Iowa at San Jose. Iowa was doing well earlier in the year, but you know what? San Jose is fighting tooth and nail right now also for their spot, even though they have solidified their a spot in the playoffs. I don't think there's really going to be any.
I don't think there is. I think that Jesse Smith will have a big game for Iowa like he always does, but that's only because that's a one-dimensional team. My question is this the last Mike Hohensee coached team?
It's possible.
Mike Hohensee has struggled the last 2 years. I know the league's probably going to put him in the Hall of Fame. I wouldn't this year, but you know, I think he deserves to go eventually. But he struggled the last 2 years. I mean, you know, he had a team last year that was 6-12. Guess what? That team right now is the best team in the Arena Football League.
Exactly.
After he left, Chicago didn't miss a beat when he left last year. They made the playoffs. They're probably going to be 11 wins this year. And so, you know, the question, you know, that has to happen is, you know, what happens with Mike Hohensee after this game? You know, I mean, they have the game the week after, but you know, this is a big one
exactly.
for them. I mean, they play San Antonio the week after, and you know,
it's gonna be tough.
It's gonna be tough for Mike, and you know, I definitely think San Jose is gonna take this, and I'm gonna say they're gonna score at least 60 points to make the fans happy.
Yay! Free food.
Free food.
I know you won't be here with us for the next segment, Andy, but I know you were able to do this last year. I really appreciate you being able to help me with the show in Adam's absence. I've met you in person. You are a top-notch guy. I really appreciate what you do for the league as far as a fan and being able to – and what you've done in the past too. You're very knowledgeable in your history, Andy. You are always welcome here at AFL Tonight, because as I said, you are one of the fans that you are able to get across your opinion, and you're able to back it up with the history that you've done. I mean, hey, what other person can we say at Arena Fan has had so? Let's name off again. GM of player, director, player personnel. You've been, you name it, you've done it all. So it's again, Andy, it's my pleasure, and I really again I thank you for.
No problem. Well, I thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be on here to talk about the game. I love this sport so much. You know, I think if money had no option, every receiver, every quarterback in the National Football League would not be playing in the NFL. They'd be playing in this game because this is such a better sport, and, you know, you get to celebrate each time you score a touchdown while you don't get to do that in the other league. You know, for the guest that's coming on right now, good friend of mine, you know, known him a very, very long time. My first move when I went over to be vice president of the San Diego Riptide was to beg and plead, and then week four of the season, he became our general manager. And, you know, under his guidance and you know, stuff that we did there, we became the first team in AF2 history to win a playoff game after going 7-9 in the regular season. We were 6-6 with him. And you know, he's a valued friend, and he's absolutely one of the greatest to ever play this game, and I know everyone that's listening is going to enjoy talking with him.
Exactly, and we want, you know what, since we're going to go directly to the segment itself, Andy, go ahead and give the intro. Who are we about to speak to?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to, you know, the guy that you're going to be talking with is number three all time in the AFL's 20 greatest players list. He will probably be in the top five when the league announces that during the playoffs. First player ever with 20,000 all-purpose yards. When he left the game, he was number one in almost every single possible category. He played on five Arena Bowl championship teams where he was the MVP twice. He was a league MVP. He was on the All Arena Bowl team, the 15th anniversary team, first team. Ladies and gentlemen, George LaFrance.
It doesn't matter where you are in league history at all, George. You have always been, it sounds like you've always been the quintessential team player. You're there not for yourself. Right. You're there for everybody else.
Right. And the goal is to win the championship.
Yeah.
That was our goal.
Now, does it matter? You know, you've been, you know, you're in the Hall of Fame now. You were listed to the number three on the 20th greatest players list. So on and so on. You got your five championships. You know, the league's coming out, you know, the 25th year this year, they're coming out, they're still doing their list of top 25 players. Does it matter where you're going to be ranked? Does it matter at all, or just to be among those 25 players, that's all that matters?
Just to be recognized among the 25. Most of my teammates in it, so I was looking at all my teammates.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's what I was telling Andy. Me and him was talking. I said, when I was in Detroit, it was me, Gary Mullen, and Dwayne Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
That was the three receivers we had. So there's only one football.
Yeah, exactly.
And then in Tampa, it was me, Stevie, had the majority, and then Law Dog eventually got into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never really a go-to person. I was more of a decoy all my years.
Yeah.
When they needed me, they threw it to me in so many words. But other than that, I'll be 47 in September.
Yes, that's George, you're not much older than I am. I'm sure, you know what?
Yep.
If looking at the way that today's game is, how do you think you would go against some of the top players like the Damien Harrells and the Maurice Purifies? And do you think you would be able, you'd be on their level, or was the game when you played totally different than it is now?
No, as a matter of fact, it's to me, if you're looking at the scoring that they're doing now, it was tougher back then,
mm-hmm.
Than to me, because the guys was going both ways, but then the way the zones were set up, when I first got in, you couldn't play zone. It had to go man to man.
Right.
When I first started playing arena ball. And so if you played zone, and now people started to do a zone scheme, and now they're moving the jack out, you know, moving them around.
Mm-hmm.
It's like by them moving that jack, that's more for the offense now to read off of, as opposed to keeping that jack there so he can put pressure on the quarterback. The point that the games change over time, but
right.
If I could have had one foot in on kickoff returns, when they first started, when I first started, I had a lot more yards.
Yeah.
Also, they started that rule, you get the ball on the 25-yard line or 20-yard line if you kick it out of bounds. They was kicking the ball out of bounds to me many times.
That's true.
I didn't get a chance to touch the ball. I mean, a lot of times.
That's true. And
so
for those who don't know, you had to, as you were saying, today it's one foot in. Back then when you were playing, you had to have both feet.
Yeah, they had both feet.
Yeah.
That's right. And so the rules change big time. I would have had a lot more yards as many times. Even kicking the ball away.
Yeah.
When I first started playing, they was kicking the ball away. You get the ball on the five. So it wasn't hurting them.
Exactly.
They didn't let me touch the ball.
What about the substitution rules now, George? Do you think it's played a huge difference in how the game is? Obviously, Commissioner Kurz announced 2 weeks ago that he was looking at bringing back Iron Man football to the Arena Football League. Comparing now to then, I mean, do you think Commissioner Kurz bringing it back is a plus for the league, or do you think with all the changes that it's made over the past couple years that the league is beyond the true Iron Man game?
Well, it's right now, it's not a true Iron Man until they bring it back.
Right.
Just the athletes, just to find someone to go both ways, that's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. And as far as the guys learning the game now, they still trying to learn it.
Yeah.
This game, you ain't going to learn it overnight.
No.
It's going to take a while. even myself, it took me good 2 years, 2-3 years to really understand the game.
It's just the different nuances and the et cetera for the game.
But as far as the field size and the players, that didn't change. It's just the angles. That's all the same. You see, that's what the new guys don't know, the angles of the game. They're not using it to their advantage yet. They're even going in motion. To me, they're not threatening the DB.
When
they're going in motion.
Yep. Now,
when we was going in motion, we backed them up.
True. That is true. You are right. I mean, it is a totally different game. Do you think the substitution rules, the new substitution rules, have something to do with that? Where they don't have to learn?
They're not able to learn
the game completely because they don't have to go both ways.
That too, but still, if you fresh on time, then you should be coming down the field in motion full speed.
It's true. Yep.
If you don't put fear in that DB to back him up, and what I did when I was coming in motion full tilt, I get to read if it's man or zone just for going in motion. But if you just coming off not full speed, it's hard to read the defense because you're not threatening them.
Right.
I mean, that's as a receiver's, you know, going in motion standpoint.
Right. No.
I got a chance to read everything when I was coming in motion full tilt.
Exactly. No. It's true. I mean, I can go back and check the old, you know, the old games on that I have on tape or on DVD, and I'll see the yourself or some of the old time greats, and you look at the game now, and it's a totally different game, and that's what I liked about the old AFL. It's that it was a pure game where you didn't have to worry about it. It was a game where you could enjoy it and not have to worry about, I guess, a lot of the stuff that we have today. If I could, George, I would say I would love to revert back to the old game. I would love to revert back to the old game because it's.
It's like you're saying, all the rules, it still goes through the committees and this and that and the other, and as opposed to trying to get it changed.
Right.
You know, Mr. Curtis would love to do it, but he's still got to go through all these different committees.
That's true.
It's not going to happen overnight.
No. It would be nice,
that's just
though.
How it is.
It would be nice to bring back. You know, I was very surprised. I think a lot of other fans were surprised when he mentioned that they were looking at bringing back. I'm guessing true Ironman football, but I don't, you know, we haven't heard anything else since he made the announcement. And I know there was a poll that the fans were able to vote on. I don't know if fans today understand what true Ironman football is, you know, because a lot of the ones, you know, they can go back and, you know, they don't understand the complete, as I said, they don't understand the game completely. So.
Right. And it takes, you have to be involved.
Yes.
As a player, you know, on the field, running up. Yes, the coaches they coach in the game, but as a player, that even the linemen in the trenches,
exactly,
playing offense and defense, they know.
Yeah. Now, with the salaries being what they were back then, George, many fans may not know. What did you do besides play arena football when you weren't playing arena football?
I was teaching
yeah.
in high school. I was getting ready for life after football. So I was preparing myself. Mm-hmm. So when I started playing, I continued teaching.
Because you had to find some way to subsidize it because of how low the
salary
was.
How arena ball is set up.
Exactly.
Right. Well, to be honest, I was one of the blessed ones.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, one of the few blessed ones, let me put it that way. It was more, what's the word I want to use? See, back then, we had personal service contracts.
Right.
That you do more things for your team and the community and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they get money in for sponsorship. It was like a trade-off. So back then, we was in pretty good situations. Mm-hmm. The teams I played with was real nice. Well, Detroit Tampa, was in New Jersey my last year.
Right.
I mean, I was very fortunate. Very, very, very fortunate.
Now, when you talk about what you're getting paid back then and what you did to subsidize it, you look at, unfortunately, what happened with the labor conflict that they had this year. Do you find the gains, if you care to comment, do you find the gains that the players have made this year were worth all the trouble? I mean, because I know you weren't around when the first CBA came around in 2000, or it was just about the...
Yes, I was.
Oh, that's right.
I was involved.
Oh, were you? Okay.
I was involved. Yes, indeed. I understand the negotiating. I was there in 2000.
That's right. The Guidry agreement.
That's right. I was there. I understand the negotiating part.
Yeah.
And as far as the league, to me personally, on the record, they came up huge.
Yeah.
The players, to me, lost. If they're going to be paying room and board.
That's true. I know that was one of the.
I mean, how are you making money if you're paying for rent, playing for housing?
So it's like a percentage of the extra money that they're going to be making will go right back into somebody else's pocket.
Exactly.
Okay.
It goes right back to the team. I don't know who negotiating for the players' behalf. Whoever was doing it, I don't have a clue.
Okay.
But when we was doing it, we was going for pension. We was going for insurance for guys who wanted to work out during the off season, and nice little salary would be nice just for them to be comfortable. But our thing was pension and insurance.
Exactly.
That's what our goals were. I don't know what their goals are now. But like I said, whatever they did, that was their call.
Yeah, no, I know. and
to me, it wasn't a win-win. It's a win for the league more than for the players, to me.
Now, when you were involved back in 2000, obviously there was the – did you ever think that the league would have canceled the season? Even if it was a short period of time, George, that they canceled it back in 2000, were you surprised?
No, not at all, because I was involved with it back in 89 when they canceled the league back then, too. After the, 87?
Okay.
All right, 87 when they started.
Yeah.
88 was my first year.
That's right.
We was making $1,000 a week. 89, we were supposed to be getting a $1,200, a $200 raise, be $1,200 a year in 89. The owners in the league folded in 89. They folded.
That is interesting, George.
Yes. And we came back in 89 for $200 a week. That's when they had us traveling all over the world.
The barnstorming
back in
season.
89.
Yeah, the old barnstorming season.
We traveled all over.
Yep.
And so we went through it back in 89. So when they was talking about this thing again in 2000, I'm like, fellas, I've been through this. I know personally what they're going to do, what they could do. I was there.
That is interesting.
They didn't listen. So when they canceled it back then, and then they did it again in 2000,
yep.
Why
yep.
They ain't going to cancel it again in the later? I mean, the owners are in there to make money, which we understand.
Mm-hmm.
We was playing the game to get a look for the NFL or Canadian League.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to play ball.
Right.
That's what we was doing. It wasn't to make money. All the people made money was the coaches. They're the only ones really got paid. The coaches got paid.
Do you find that once they got into the, when the salary cap started to get to about, I think at most it was like $2.6 million, do you think the salaries were getting a little bit out of hand? Or do you think it
It was more, when we was playing, we had personal service contracts.
Right.
So those owners can pay the personal service, they can pay. The guys that couldn't pay, well, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Yankees and whoever else that can't pay.
Right. Okay.
Basically, that's how it was. But then some of the owners say that's not fair, this and that, let's do let's have everybody pay the same salary, this and that and the other, but they couldn't afford it.
Interesting.
That's how they end up folding.
George,
I
learn something new every day. I've known this, as I said to you before, I've been a fan of this league for so long. I just learned something new. That's what you get when you talk to an AFL, I'm trying to, you know, there's so many words I could say for you, George.
I understand the game. I've been through it all.
Yeah.
And when we started playing, and the guys, we our goals was to go to the championship, was get to the playoff, and then play for the championship. That was our goal. The teams now, I don't know what their goal is.
Yeah.
I don't know who playing for this, who wanted to go to the championship.
Right. Just, yeah.
Because what that team did, when they folded, when they decided to boycott and they didn't want to play, I don't guess they was playing for, they didn't want to go to the championship. To me.
You know, well, it's funny you say that, George, because considering that team was, it was just on the fence at that point, and since then, the Cleveland Gladiators have tanked, basically,
well,
and you are right.
You know what? We played to get to the playoff and win a championship. We won rings. I don't know what they're playing for now.
It was pure, I guess we can honestly say that when you were playing, it was for fun, pure, it was fun, pure football.
Definitely.
Is that fair? Yeah.
Yeah, it's fair.
Yeah.
In so many words, we knew what we was getting into when we wanted to play the game.
Right.
And now they got a lot of other leagues that's coming out, indoor types football.
True.
People can play as well, but they want to play arena football. Well, arena football is a little different. Now, you have to, these coaches that's putting these teams together now with their GMs, and now they got player personnels. I'm like, okay. Back then we just had the coach. Coach, pick the players, but now they gotta go through all kind of loops.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
It would be.
Me personally, I think I'll be perfect as a player personnel guy,
okay.
Or, yeah, the director of player personnel, or a GM, or assistant GM to help people to grow, or understand the game, work with the players. Cause see, this is different. It's different. They need to understand the game. To the fullest.
If you were to be approached by, would you, any team, would it be, you drop it, you would take it in a heartbeat if you could be involved in the Arena Football League again?
I would love to help somebody
in
a heartbeat. But the thing is, now, see, like now I'm teaching in college now.
Right.
So I'm off from May to August. So it's just like when I was teaching.
Right.
When I was playing ball. So I don't want to be a head coach. I'll be more of a person that can be able to have some flexibility to finish my teaching contract once it's done. I still can work from home with the computers, the internet, personnel thing, helping. And then when I'm done with teaching, I can go there for the season and then come back when school starts.
Nice.
Now, that's an option.
Yeah.
That's out there. Because, see, it's like when I was playing, I did both. I was in class 2 days a week, and I flew to Tampa for 3 days. Well, 3, 4, 5 days, and I'm fly back. I was going back and forth when school was in season.
How did you do it, George?
Yeah.
How did you do it?
Easy.
Really?
I was on the red eye out of Albuquerque. So let's say, for example, when season started, I didn't go to camp. I was fortunate. Markham didn't let me go to camp because I knew the offense. But I'll get there at least a week before season, just to get my timing with the quarterback, and then we start going. But if it's during school, so let's say it's in May, April, May.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be in class Monday, Tuesday. I'll miss 2 days of class. And then I'll go ahead and fly out on a Wednesday midnight, and I'll get on the plane. I'll get to Tampa 6, 8 in the morning, getting time for practice for Wednesday, Thursday, and we play Friday or Saturday, and I fly back. Oh, it was unreal.
Wow.
But I got it done. Now, personally, how you can afford that, well, I was blessed.
Yeah. It sounds like it, George. I'm sure I said it's something that a lot of fans did not know about what the players did just to play the game back then. And it, you know, it.
It's like you find something that you can enjoy. Mm-hmm. And yes, you want to be taken care of. But the housing was one of our biggest issues. You see, if you don't have housing, and guys flying in and they get released and they sign a contract for the apartment, now they stuck.
Yep.
So that was so good about arena football. That was different from any other league. You had a place, so anything happened, you didn't have to worry about it. You had to worry about utilities, nothing. It was furnished apartments. That's just how it went.
You were able to play football. You had a place to live. You didn't have to worry about it.
Right.
And it's now, George, with the all the 25th anniversary stuff that is occurring this year. If you were able to pick out, and I know you said you're always been a team player, but if you yourself could pick out one moment that stands out in your mind, what would it be?
Over 12 years.
I know it's. I know it. I sort of left a big window. I'm wondering.
No. It's a good one because I'm gonna use my Paris one. We had an exhibition game in Paris, France. I got the flag here. They were singing "Vive la France." They were singing a French song in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
I got a chance to come out being introduced in Paris, France, coming out with the French flag when I was playing in Detroit.
Now, for those who don't remember...
That was surreal.
Yeah, for those who don't remember...
It was exhibition games.
Exactly. The league had exhibition games. They did it for a couple of years over in Europe.
Yes. I got a chance to go there 5 times.
Wow.
I was blessed.
How was the reaction to you guys?
We were professional athletes. They took care of us. Now, my wife, she went a couple of times. Now, the women didn't get treated as well as the guys.
Mm-hmm.
But as professional athletes, we were treated with respect. We had no issues at all. If we need directions to go anywhere, and they helped us. But my wife had another story. They didn't help them that much.
Oh,
they
no.
keep telling them don't speak English. So the guys will go walk out and we'll ask the same thing and they'll point it out for us. Oh my goodness. But that's how it go.
Yeah.
But we got some good friends though still in Paris and I found a couple of them on Facebook and they found me.
That's fantastic.
But not all people like that.
That's fantastic.
But that would be my moment, would be coming out. And then I got a chance to meet one of the Duchess from Denmark.
Oh, really?
Back in 89. Yeah, yeah. She wanted to meet a couple of us, and Curtis took me and a couple other guys up there to meet the Duchess in our uniforms. We didn't get a chance to change it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. You
have to give with. Jerry Kurtz would know
okay.
exactly which one that was.
I'm sure it was quite interesting too, by the way, George, to be introduced to the crowd as George LaFrance, they probably pronounce it like George LaFrance. Am I right?
Yes. And playing for Detroit, and we was playing against Chicago, and it was just unreal. It was like, your name is really LaFrance? And I was like, yes. And they're like, wow. But... That was a surreal one. That'll be the moment, I would say, coming out with arena ball.
Exactly.
And arena ball has been good to me. The other thing I wanted to do is doing some commentating. But the problem I'm having is I never got a chance to do no commentating in high school, college. And that's the only way they're going to give me a chance on the NFL Network if you got any type of interviewing as being an interviewer.
It's
being an interviewee.
Yeah.
Like, I've been interviewed so many times.
Yeah.
And I understand the game. I was just trying to get a shot just to speak on the air. Because a lot of the NFL players, they didn't do that.
No.
But they giving them a chance because it was in the NFL.
It's just like,
that's just how it goes.
It's just like Shedrick Bonner. I never thought Shedrick Bonner was going to be, you know, he ended up, he's been a commentator.
He did it for Fox, too. He was on Fox.
That's true. That is true.
He did do something. You see, so that's how he got in.
That is true.
But I've never got a chance to get on, do any of that. But make a long story short, it's something I always had interest in to help explain the game because I know it.
Yeah.
And you know, you got a passion for the game. You got to play the game. You can help explain the game to the fans, what's going on. You know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's. I know.
Exactly. Now, you've been great.
It is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. You've been gracious to give us your time, George. Before I let you go and we finish the interview, I want to ask you one thing. If you were able to say anything to today's players, what would you say to them about the game or give them a little bit of advice?
The number one, you got to respect the game and understand the game. A lot of young guys that come in, they think, oh, I can play arena ball, until they actually got on that field and started running routes and covering people or playing lineman or quarterback. It's you got to respect it. And the game is so fast, it's so quick, and patience. And you want to learn as much as possible. Even my book, I got to start pushing my book again, The Pattern of the Game. My book talks about the fundamentals of arena football, how to catch the ball off the net, knowing the nets, where the ball is going to come off when it hits the net towards the field, knowing the sidelines, knowing your teammates, not being selfish, and you're playing to win. Markham always told us, make sure you uncover every stone. Leave no stones left unturned.
Mm-hmm.
You know your opponent better than they know themselves. And so when we play against, we respect our opponents. We didn't fear them. But you got to respect them.
All right. Well, George, I can honestly I can honestly say on behalf of all longtime arena football fans and new arena football fans that we appreciate everything that you have done for this game. I hope that if you are coming to Arena Bowl in New Orleans, that I will be able to shake your hand for the very first time, because it'll be my pleasure, sir, to shake your hand.
it's my pleasure. That's why I was born in New Orleans.
Oh.
I'm from Louisiana. That's home.
That's right. So
right. So my parents, we live in New Iberia. I was raised, but I'm working on it to come down.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And then me and Fred is also, we got to get that association going too. We got the player association. I need to make sure I mention that.
Yes.
And y'all, we didn't forget y'all, players. Me and Fred working on some things. I know we keep saying it, but it takes time. And we'll get it together.
And if I'm not mistaken, I know there
is... Tim, thank you.
My pleasure, Jordan. If I'm not mistaken, I can give a quick shout-out. There is the alumni page over on Facebook, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And if you have any information, you can... I know you can contact them through the Facebook page if you haven't already gotten onto the page. Now, George, is your book still available to be bought, by the way?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, my book's still available.
Is it available?
Just shoot me an email on Facebook, and then I'll get you.
Fantastic.
I'll get it done.
Well, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll autograph them all and send them out.
Oh, nice. Ladies and gentlemen.
And they're 25 bucks.
There we go. That's what I wanted to find out. Got to get in that plug, right, George?
Well, you know what? In arena ball, you see, when I was playing, when we was playing at the beginning, the league really never promoted the players. It was always the league.
Right.
That was the other big catch. You see, we wasn't real big as far as name-wise. People knew who we were, but we really didn't promote the players. It was always the league.
Exactly.
And that's what we continue to do, promoting the league.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to an AFL legend, Mr. George LaFrance. George, thanks again, sir.
Okay.
And for everybody here at the AFL Tonight Studios, our thanks to George LaFrance. For Andy Lipischneck, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.